Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy. Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I am okay. I'm recording significantly earlier in the week than I usually manage. And I would like to say that that's because I am now a beacon of successful productivity. The truth is that my Wi-Fi is down and I'm struggling to fill my time. Obviously, I could also be actually de-hoarding, but I have been doing some of that as well. But yes, here we are. So today I am going to share my success of the week and my weird dilemma of the week. I'm going to read a new review and then I'm going to talk all about the path of least resistance and what that means and how it can make de-hoarding so much easier. And then I am going to shout out a podcast with a top tip. So, my success of the week and my weird dilemma of the week. My success of the week, as soon as I did it, I knew that this would have to be a success of the week. And that is that twice now, I have walked past the back to school display in the supermarket without buying any stationery. Well, without buying anything, but stationery is the real danger zone for me. And having a whole display of colourful pens and things is, oh, that speaks to my heart. And yet I was able to just go, oh, look, if I look at those things, I will go home with pens when I have a lot of pens. And then I also made myself visualize the pens I have that are all roughly in the same place. Well, kind of. I did like with pens. I am a big advocate of like with like. But, you know, you do need pens in different rooms. So I did like with like and put them all together. But now they are in different rooms, but still together in each room. So like all the pens in my bedroom are in one place and all the pens in the front room are in one place, that kind of thing. So I visualized those, which reassured me that there was no scarcity of pens in my life. And I reminded myself of how bad I am at not picking up things if I feel like they're a bargain. And those two things combined meant that I walked past relatively easily and didn't buy anything. So that is my success of the week and I'm quite pleased with myself. Now let's see whether I can go another 2 weeks till the start of term without indulging in back to school stationery. My weird dilemma of the week, I suspect, is actually quite a common dilemma for people who hoard, not least because a lot of us are quite creative, crafty people. And that was what to do with some craft bits and bobs that I had decided I needed to get rid of. And I couldn't really donate them to a charity shop because it's kind of a few of this and a few of that. And a charity shop probably wouldn't know what to do with like embellishments and things like that. And in years gone by, I would have painstakingly uploaded them all to eBay and spent weeks answering inane questions about something that cost a pound, and then hating my life as I queued up in the post office to send them. And so I was determined to not do that. But I really was struggling with the idea of throwing them away, because partly, I guess because they have potential, because they cost money. But I think because I know how much crafty people really appreciate these kinds of things, it just felt wrong to put them in the bin. And I really didn't know what to do. And then I heard about a local charity that is running craft groups for, I think, like anybody who is maybe socially isolated, that kind of thing. And they have limited funds, as a lot of these things do, and were asking for donations of crafty stuff. And it could not have been more perfect, because it didn't have to be complete unopened packs like charity shops would have preferred. I didn't have to feel like I was wasting the potential of these lovely things. And I don't need to feel sad about getting rid of those things, because they will be really appreciated and enjoyed by people who might otherwise be having a bit of a miserable day. And so I felt really good about that. And so as soon as I found out about them, I was like, okay, you have to grasp this moment and don't think it's a good idea and then not do anything about it. So I took them that the same week I found out about them. And that was great. But then, you may remember from a previous episode, I interviewed a woman called Heather, who founded a social enterprise called Cloud's End. I will link to that episode in the show notes. And I saw on Instagram, I think, that Cloud's End are doing this brilliant thing where they support people who hoard, and they are asking people to turn up on the same day with all of their spare craft supplies that they're trying to get rid of. And then they would spend the day making crafty things together, but then when they left at the end of the day, they would only take home the things they had made and nothing else. And I thought that was such a brilliant idea in a whole range of ways. People will be glad that their craft stuff is being used. People get to be creative, maybe with items that belong to somebody else originally, so that are new to them. People would have a sense of community, and that would be great. And at the end of the day, they would have less in their home than they started with. So it seemed, it just seemed like a great idea. So nice one, Cloud's End. So I also got a new review left on Podchaser, and that was by someone called I Am Odaris. And they said, "Wonderful podcast. Few podcasts have helped me lift this much shame and take action." Thank you. I'm so glad the podcast has helped me lift shame and take action as well. And I'm so glad that that is transferring out to people who listen, because both of those are huge issues for many of us who hoard. We're so paralyzed by shame, and we get stuck and don't know how to take action. And they combine, and they exist separately. And so thank you so much for the review. It really, really helps. So today I'm going to be talking about the path of least resistance, and how by embracing it, we can pave the way for an improved home, but also better coping strategies, a better understanding of our situation, better practice and experience in dehoarding. And it gives us an opportunity to learn about ourselves and the way we work, which is invaluable, especially if you have felt really stuck and like you don't know how to do this. So sometimes people refer to the path of least resistance in a kind of disparaging way, that if somebody takes the path of least resistance, they're just not trying hard enough. And this is not to say you should never take a challenging route somewhere. It's not to say you should never embrace something difficult or go about something that you know is going to be really, really hard for you. Absolutely not saying any of that. But if you're dealing with hoarding, and if it's a really long-standing problem, and if you're really stuck and don't know where the next step should be, it's precisely this kind of situation that the path of least resistance is just a gift for. It's all very well saying or believing that we should be more challenged and believing that having everything too easily isn't a good way to live. But I'm talking about something that is a massive challenge on its own. It's already a massive challenge. You don't need additional challenges when trying to deal with something that might be the biggest challenge you've ever had to deal with. So there's a place for furrowing your own path. There's a place for going through the deepest, darkest bit of the forest and finding your way and feeling really, really proud of yourself at the end because you've achieved something. But if the thing that you're embarking on is already a massive, massive challenge, then looking for and following the path of least resistance might be the only way you can get through it. It might be the only way you can start moving. And so basically, when you follow the path of least resistance, what that means is kind of doing things in a way that flows naturally. It is choosing the most straightforward, the most obvious, the easiest, the simplest option when faced with different options, going for the one that makes the most sense to you, going for the one that makes your life easier in a context of things that are very, very difficult. And when we look at a challenge like de-hoarding, when we look at a challenge like a hoarded home, it is so bewildering and overwhelming. And just what do you do? Where do you start? How on earth do you deal with a challenge like 6 full rooms? And there's no shame in not facing a really difficult challenge with the most difficult way through that challenge. Any way through the challenge is worthy, and anything that gets you making any progress at all is worth doing. We don't have to do everything the hardest way. We just don't. And often getting really stuck is what stops us doing anything. And I am such a big proponent of it's better to do something than nothing. And if you can only do one tiny thing, it's still better than doing no tiny things at all. And looking for the path of least resistance and setting things up as easily, to make it as easy a process as possible, just is logical, especially if you can get rid of that moral voice in your head that says you're somehow cheating. You're not cheating. If things get done, that is all good. If you make progress, it's hard to see a valid argument against that. A core benefit, as I've just been talking about, of the path of least resistance is that it might mean you start where otherwise you wouldn't have started. Or it might mean you make an amount of progress that you otherwise wouldn't have made. But there are some other benefits of it as well. One is that I find it tends to bypass overthinking a bit. If you're the kind of person who dedicates an hour to de-hoarding, but spends that whole hour trying to work out where precisely the best place to start would be. Could be looking in a mirror as I say that. I'm a lot better than I used to be, not least because I've embraced this kind of thinking. It also, when your path is cleared of unnecessary obstacles and you can start to flow and you can start to make progress, ideas start to flow and action starts to flow, and it gets easier as things get moving. And as soon as you get any action taken or anything moving, then you've opened up a little bit of space for your next action. And then after that action, you've opened up a little bit of space for your next action. And that might be physical space. It might be more emotional space. It might be more a sense of possibility in your mind. And when you follow the path of least resistance and make a little bit of progress through doing that, you get to rehearse. Not rehearse because you are doing it for real. Rehearse suggests practicing for getting it right in the future. Whereas I guess what you do is you learn, you start practicing for real. And the more you practice at anything, the better you get at it. And the more you start to flow even more. If you have ever tried to learn the violin, then I pity your parents, first of all. It's a tricky instrument for the first 6 months to listen to. But if you've ever had to, if you've ever learned the violin, or indeed any musical instrument or any skill, you know that it can be quite agonizing at first. And the more you do it, the more you practice, the more skilled you get. And this is the same. You get a bit of experience at de-hoarding the easiest things. And then when you get to a stage that's a bit trickier, you've practiced, you've got experience, you know a little bit what you're dealing with, and you've got that experience to inform what you go on to do. Another benefit of the path of least resistance is it will give you more insight into your own mind in terms of what works for you and what doesn't. When I first started trying to de-hoard, I had no idea how to do it. And partly that was because of the volume and the overwhelm. But partly it was because I'd been so convinced for so long that it was an impossible task, that I hadn't tried. And so I didn't know what would work for me because I hadn't tried for so long. And the more I tentatively did the tiniest thing, the more I could get to know, okay, you respond quite well to that. Okay, you really shut down when that happens. You're quite good at dealing with this kind of thing. You work better when this is in place. And that's all valuable knowledge to go forward with. And you will keep learning the more you do. And then also, as well as having a better understanding of your own mind and how you work, you will also get better insight into what the score is with your home. Something I had no idea about and still struggle with was how long things would take in terms of de-hoarding. I would look at a pile and think, I don't know if that will be done in an hour or a month. I just don't know. And I still struggle with that, partly because I never quite know what's going to be in a pile. And it could be something I find really easy to deal with, or it could be something really impossible. But I'm better at that than I used to be because of letting myself, when it's difficult, flow down the path of least resistance. And that has given me experience and it's given me practice at the practical side of it. I have a better understanding of what might be under the next layer of stuff than I had before. And a lot of the path of least resistance stuff, the more I researched it, thankfully I researched it before the Wi-Fi went down, the more I researched it, the more I realized that quite a lot of it was about being intentional. I often wonder whether people who are neat and tidy, on completely naturally neat and tidy, or whether they are constantly intentional. And I don't know, but I do know that if you are not neat and tidy, we have to be intentional if things are to not get worse, never mind to actually get better. And I think when you start considering things in terms of which of these options is the path of least resistance, you can start to be more intentional and more deliberate about what you do decide to do. And part of the things you can choose from will be based on what feels good. Maybe you're really enjoying working in a particular room, then it makes so much sense to me that the path of least resistance, when you're considering where to do some work on, would be to go with the one you really, really enjoy. That is the one that is not going to, your brain is not going to trip you up by dreading it, for instance. So a man called Robert Fritz wrote a book called The Path of Least Resistance. And I have to be clear, I have not read this book. However, I have read some extracts. I'm going to read two paragraphs that I think set up really well the ideas behind what I've been thinking in terms of the path of least resistance and de-hoarding. So, Robert Fritz said, "The underlying structure of your life determines the path of least resistance. Just as a riverbed determines the path of the water flowing through it, so the structures in your life determine your path of least resistance. Whether you are aware of these structures or not, they are there. The structure of the river remains the same whether there is water flowing through it or not. You can change the fundamental underlying structures of your life. Just as engineers can change the path of a river by changing the structure of the terrain so that the river flows where they want it to go, you can change the very basic structure of your life so that you can create the life you want. With an appropriate change in the underlying structure of your life, the path of least resistance cannot lead anywhere except in the direction you really want to go." So this is about looking at the structure of your life and in terms of de-hoarding, about kind of the systems you've got set up and saying, what can I do with those systems that will make de-hoarding easier and will make me less resistant to the idea of doing it and the practicality of doing it? And how do I get that structure to be the way I need it to be? So I'm going to go through some of the things I've thought of that I think help us to set up those systems, that structure, so that de-hoarding is easier and makes more sense and is more intentional than not de-hoarding. And the first one of those is choose your timing to fit in with your life realistically. I am not a morning person. And so when I read an article about decluttering that says, just get up an hour earlier and do an hour's decluttering before breakfast, I know that is never, ever going to happen, ever. I'm never going to hear my alarm go off an hour early and think, Great. Time to declutter for an hour before breakfast. I don't even eat breakfast, so none of it makes sense to me. That would be, I mean, the minute my alarm goes off, that's already a path of great resistance. So if deep down I know that I can just reset it for an hour later and go back to sleep, there is a 98% chance I would do that. So for me, getting up an hour earlier is a path of great resistance. Whereas there are other things that I can do that where I can fit it into my life, I can fit de-hoarding into my life in a way that is a lot less coming up against resistance. So I know that I'm much better at kind of adding things to what I'm already doing, incorporating tasks into the things I already do. So I get a supermarket delivery every other week. And so I know I've got to hang around for a couple of hours downstairs when, you know, when that's due. And so what I've started doing is going, well, I've got to hang around for a couple of hours. What I'm going to do is use that couple of hours deliberately to de-hoard. I'm not great at sitting around waiting for any, you know, deliveries, anything like that. I get quite antsy. I don't know what to do with myself. And so it's turning out that using that time where I'm already going to be downstairs and not quite sure what to do with myself, using that time specifically in the kitchen lately, although that may change over time, to just go, well, the supermarket delivery is going to arrive any minute. I'm going to put those plates away. I'm going to load the dishwasher. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's time where I would already be in round about that room and with little else to do. So it fits. It makes sense to incorporate that. It might be if you're already washing your hands several times a day, you might be able to incorporate wiping the sink down every time you do it. Or it might be that you think, well, every day I leave for work, and maybe I can incorporate into that taking a bag of rubbish out with me as I leave the house every day. For me, incorporating things into things I'm already doing in that way is really, really helpful. And so I'm using timing and association to flow down a path that is not full of rocks and boulders. Instead, it's a path that's already quite smooth, and I can just go with the flow and take advantage of tacking things on to a place I would already be or a task I would already be doing. The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. For August, the question for you to answer is, what's tripping you up at the moment? You might be finding it impossible to deal with old photos, or you might have an overriding sense of overwhelm, or you just don't know where to start. This is your opportunity to share your barriers and obstacles with us all. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message for me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for August is what's tripping you up at the moment. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. Another thing, I discovered this by accident and made a podcast about it some time ago. I will see if I can find it. I can't remember offhand what I called it, but if I can find it, I will put it in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. What I found completely by accident when I was sitting on the stairs waiting for a delivery, it's a theme. I think I was waiting for a takeaway specifically. And I noticed some stuff around me that could definitely do with tidying, cleaning, decluttering, all of that. And by chance, really, there was a roll of rubbish bags right next to me. And I just tore a rubbish bag off the roll and started putting the things around me into the rubbish bag because it was there. And after that, I made a point of making sure there were strategically positioned rubbish bags in every room. And it's not that having rubbish bags close by guarantees that I will be throwing things away. I wish, but no. But if there are no rubbish bags close by, my brain, for some reason, sees that as an insurmountable obstacle. And I will sit and spend quite a bit of time thinking, oh, I could be tidying up if there were rubbish bags here, without it ever occurring to me to go find some rubbish bags. And so what I've found is that if I make sure there are rubbish bags in every room, especially right by the places I tend to sit, then what I find is if the mood does strike me, it's really easy to be getting some stuff off the floor and into the rubbish bags. It's really easy. There is little resistance on that path. If there are no rubbish bags and I don't have any faith in my ability to find some rubbish bags, it feels like the big boulder getting in the way of my flow, and I don't even try. So that's another example of just removing resistance from the path. And for you, it may be something different. It might be always having podcast episodes ready on your phone if you love listening to a podcast as you dehoard, rather than trying to think, I might do some dehoarding and then having to hunt down a podcast you might want to listen to, or having playlists ready if you like listening to a certain kind of music when you're dehoarding. Having those things ready to go, or anything like that ready to go, can really just remove a boulder from that path and just smooth your way down. I know I'm mixing my riverbed metaphors. I was going to say lubricate, but that's not a great word. I don't know. But essentially, what I'm saying is think about that structure. Think about the kind of things that tend to trip you up. If you get the urge to do some dehoarding, what tends to be the thing that makes you stop? And if that is something, a system you can have in place or a structure you can have in place, then look at how you can enable that structure to be more present in your life. In the same way, if you like to give certain things to the charity shop, then you might want to always have a bag or a box ready to fill with charity shop donations, again, strategically positioned around the house. It's a lot harder to get your head around donating a t-shirt if, when you choose that the t-shirt can go, you then have to create a system that will enable you to donate the t-shirt. If instead the red bag is always for charity shop donations, and as soon as the red bag is full, it goes to the charity shop, then you've got a system that makes it so much easier and gets rid of some of the resistance that would otherwise get in your way. If you find that there are certain, say books is a particular area that you're aware you have an issue with, and that you're trying really hard to work on, then there's definitely an argument for having those charity shop or jumble sale or refugee centre donation bags or boxes right by the bookcase, so that when you get the urge to donate a book, and that's a big deal, you don't then have to go and find something or create that structure that will enable you to do that. It's all about making dehoarding as easy as possible And then another bit of that system or structure might be, it might be that when the red bag is full, it goes to the charity shop. Or it might be that the charity shop bag gets donated on your way to the pizza restaurant every Friday where you go with your kids after school. Regardless of how full it is, Fridays on the way to the pizza shop because you know there's a charity shop you like on the way there. It's simple. It is a structure that makes sense. There's little resistance and it becomes part of your routine, which makes it a lot easier. It might be that the system you set up is that no matter whether you do a minute sorting or an hour's sorting, one item has to go into the charity shop bag every day. Or more, if you come across more. But if you create a system where that's the rule, that's how it works, then you normalize picking things up and thinking that can go and having the structure in place to deal with that. And the more you do it, the more routine you get. And the more routine you get, the more practice you get. And the more practice you get, the easier it gets to pick something up and make a quicker decision or a less agonizing decision about whether it can go or stay. And the thing with donating, well, the thing with getting rid of things that are still good and could still be used is that in itself can become fraught. As I mentioned, I used to try and sell everything on eBay. And sure, I can get £1 for this and £5 for that. But it becomes a burden, a massive burden, especially when you're dealing with the scale of stuff that would be leaving a hoarded home. And even if you think, okay, I'm not going to sell things, I'm going to donate everything, a lot of us get into real perfectionism about where to donate. I don't want to donate to Goodwill because that doesn't benefit a charity. There is a women's refuge I could donate to, but they're two towns away. And so I don't really want to make the trip. Or maybe I'll take things when I next go there and I don't know when that will be. And all of this, or I want to give, there's a particular charity shop that specializes in vintage clothes. So I don't want to give this vintage jacket to your common or garden Oxfam shop when I could take it to the specialist vintage Oxfam shop where they might know more about it and get £5 more for it. And we end up with too many options. And every one of those options becomes an additional barrier of its own. And we can't get anything out of the house because none of it is quite perfect. If we're going to bother to go all the way to the vintage charity shop, we may as well do that when we've got a bag full of vintage clothing items. So we don't do that because we don't have a bag full of, you know, we tie ourselves up in knots and nothing leaves the house. And the whole thing we are trying to do is get things to leave the house. So we need to think about the path of least resistance in terms of getting things out of the house that are not going in the bin. And I'm going to throw some options out here and pay attention to whether you have any immediate, yeah, but to them, because I certainly do, and I'm having to overcome them myself. But I'm also really trying to overcome them. So pay attention to what objections you do have, and then we'll talk some more. So I'm going to throw out some options. So one option for a less resistant path is to give it all to the nearest charity shop. If it's good and can be resold, it all goes to the same charity shop, even if there's a specialist one, even if some of it could go there and some of it could go there, even if you you want to spread your donations out between cancer research and multiple sclerosis research, even if all of those things, it just all goes to the nearest one, all of it. Another option is there are a lot of Facebook groups and similar, also organizations like Freegal and Freecycle, where you can offer things for free. And again, we can spend a long time deciding which the perfect one is. Is there a group to specifically give away garden items? Is there a group specifically for plus size clothes? Is there? No. Consider the first Facebook group that comes up when you search your groups. It all goes on there. And you put it up and you say, this is free. You then have a choice of people who all want the free thing. So then you've got another decision to make. And so a way to smooth that path is to have a rule that you stick to. So that might be, give it to the first person who offers to collect it. Might be, give it to the first person who says, please. It's a while since I've given stuff away on those groups, but I remember it did used to annoy me that there would be people who'd just go, I'll have it. And I would wait for the first person who said, please, and they could have it. It just felt rude. And then there are people who say, oh no, you should leave it for 24 hours because not everybody's permanently online and you might be able to give it to somebody more worthy. And that is all true. And there are people who say the people who were there straight away might be reselling the stuff. So you don't want to do that. And sure, you want the stuff to go to somebody who needs it. But, and this is important, the most important thing is that it leaves your house. That's the goal. If somebody can reuse it, that's brilliant. But the goal is it leaves your house. And you don't want somebody to pick it up and resell it for profit, but they're still taking it away from your house. And if you've listed 30 things on a free Facebook group and you're trying to assess the motives of 12 commenters on each item, that is a path of a lot of resistance. So consider the first person who offers, or the first person who meets a really easy criteria, like who says please, or who can collect it today, for instance. That might be your criteria, the person who could collect it first. Another thing to consider, if you're selling something on a local buy-sell group, you might have any number of offers and not quite know what to do. I would honestly consider something like, if you've got an option of somebody who offers you less than you want, but will collect the item today, versus somebody who offers you what you're asking for, but will collect in a week, or requires you to drop it off, just go for the person who'll pay less, but can pick the item up today. It gets it out of your house. And that is what we need to be focusing on at this stage. All of this, hopefully, will give us the space and the room and the mental energy to make the progress that means that in the future, we'll be able to be more picky if we want to, whether that's on where we donate it to or how much we ask for it or when it can be collected. But if that's not your situation at the moment, your priority has to be it leaving your house, not it leaving your house in the absolutely perfect way. And the path of least resistance may well look like the first person to comment on your Facebook post, or may well look like the charity shop that's on your street compared to the charity shop at the other side of the city. And another way to look at things in terms of the path of least resistance is in terms of what to actually work on, which room, which part of which room, which type of item. And I certainly spent a long time not doing anything because I couldn't work out precisely where I should start. And I certainly get questions from a lot of people asking, where should I start? And I changed my view a bit on this over time. I used to be quite kind of practical about it. You should start. But I never said you should start in this part of the house, because I'm always so aware that it varies for everybody. I might say start in the hallway, and you might not have a hallway, or your hallway might be immaculate because you know that that people who knock on the door can see it. It life doesn't work like that, to be that prescriptive. But I think I used to be a bit more practical in terms of start in the area that bugs you the most, which I still stand by. If you have an area that really annoys you in terms of clutter, it's definitely that's a decent reason to start working there, to hopefully annoy yourself less. Definitely something I also do still stand by is if you would have trouble evacuating your house or being rescued from your house, definitely starting in those kind of pathways is really valuable. I've argued that before and I still would. Similarly, if you've got something that needs repairing that you can't currently get repaired because of clutter, it makes sense to start in those areas. And so I think they are the things I used to tend to advocate. But increasingly, while I do stand by all of those things, I also think that wherever you are in your home is a decent place to start. Because even with the parameters that I mentioned, there's still room there to tie ourselves up in knots and create boulders that get in the way of our flow. You might spend 3 weeks wondering which bit does bug you the most and not actually get anything done. The argument for starting with whatever is in front of you now is that it's easy. It bypasses that kind of agonizing. And the thing is, it's all got to be done. And so while it may not be the most strategic place in your house to start, it's a place to start, and it's better to start less strategically than not start at all. And so if for you, one of the big boulders getting in the way of your flow is am I doing the right bit? It doesn't really matter. It's more important, even if you end up working on a part of the house that nobody sees, even if it's incidental, even if you don't think it will make a big shift, it's progress. And all of those benefits I mentioned in the start about learning about the way you work, about learning about your own reactions, about learning and practicing and getting experience at dealing with things, all of that applies, even if, strategically speaking, it's not the most urgent bit of the house. It is better to do something less strategic than to do nothing. So if the thing causing big resistance in you is getting the starting place absolutely right, then shift that boulder out of the way by starting with exactly where you're sitting as you listen. It's definitely more bouldery to start with categories of items that you find difficult. And this is another thing that varies from person to person. To me, the nostalgic stuff is definitely the hardest. And so the path of most resistance for me would be starting with family photos and letters from friends and those kinds of things. That would be a nightmare. That would be so many boulders that it would practically be a dam. Whereas for me, the path of least resistance is what I consider to be obvious trash, obvious rubbish. Now, again, I say obvious, But there are things that other people would consider to be obvious rubbish that I wouldn't. And maybe vice versa, I'm not sure. But for me, if I can spot something and I think there's no dilemma there, that should just go in the bin, that is the path of least resistance for me. And if I can start by getting rid of the obvious rubbish, that gets that de-hoarding muscle working. It gets me out of analysis paralysis. It gets me moving. It gets me some practice. It gets me a bit of confidence. And that's how the path of least resistance works. For you, that might be a different category altogether. It doesn't matter. But don't start with the bits you know you'll find the hardest. And having rules in place, I don't really like the word rules, but I can't really think of a better one. Kind of formulas, maybe. Having formulas in place can really help to reduce that resistance as well. If you know you have clothes in a lot of different sizes, then maybe make a rule that if it's more than one size in either direction away from your current size, it just goes with no discussion. I mean, arguably, it could be tighter than that. You could say if it doesn't fit me now, it can go. But I'm going for least resistance. And so say you're a size 14, then in this scenario, you can keep, for the time being, anything that is a 12, a 14, or a 16. But if it's an 8 or a 10 or an 18 or a 20, it just goes. And if you can remove having to agonize and make a decision over every item in that kind of way with a formula, then that reduces the resistance. Putting like with like is a good low resistance task because has multiple benefits. One is that you don't have to make many decisions. So if that's what tends to trip you up, you're good. All you're doing is putting all the scissors in one place or all the skirts in one place or all the spatulas in one place. It's quite practical. You don't have to think too much. And that's quite a low resistance activity. But it has other benefits as well. Like when I mentioned seeing the back to school displays and being able to visualize the results of my like with like sorting of all the pens I've found so far. It really helps you not acquire more of that thing when you can visualize that pile of 12 spatulas. It really helps you not buy any more skirts when you can visualize the 6 bags full of skirts. But it also makes it a lot less harrowing, in my experience, to get rid of some of those things. It's not just that it's easier to not bring them in. But if I think I wear skirts to work, which I don't, I think my colleagues would fall over if they saw me in a skirt. But say that was my life. If I think I wear skirts to work, so I need skirts, I can't get rid of any. But then I see my 6 bags full of skirts, each containing about 8 skirts. It's a lot easier to justify getting rid of 5 bags worth of skirts because I can soothe the panicky bit of my mind that says, but what if you need a skirt? When I can see that I am really, really fine for skirts, there is no skirt shortage in my house because like with like has happened. And even the most panicky, irrational bit of my brain can't argue with 6 bags of skirts in front of me. So like with like has all these benefits. And on top of that, it exercises those de-hoarding muscles. It gets you in the groove of doing things and it helps to build your confidence and show you that you can make progress. And the more you have that confidence, the quicker you'll start tomorrow and the less you'll resist the day after. And it all contributes to a scenario where you're just much better off. Because we need to remind ourselves that every step we take today forges a path that already has less resistance than it would have had if we hadn't taken any steps today. Even if I do one tiny thing today, that makes tomorrow a tiny bit easier. And if I do a tiny thing every day, it makes next year quite a bit easier. And if we can see every small step as something that eases the way for future us, that's quite motivating, even if we can't believe it, even if we don't fully trust that throwing away one piece of paper today has any benefit to ourselves at all. It all does. Ultimately, the path of least resistance is about not making this harder than it needs to be. It is hard. It's going to be hard. But there's no reason for it to be harder than it has to be. What can you do that will make this easier? Do it. Do you want to be a dehoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So, shout out this week to the Get Organized with Declutter Me podcast. The top tip comes from Shalina from that podcast talking about spending money on stuff that ends up as clutter. Have a listen.
And I always say, you know, yes, you know, you declutter, you get rid of a lot of stuff and you see how much money you wasted. But think about the future, that you're not going to waste money again because you're not going to do the same thing again, because you've seen how much you've wasted up to now. So I always try and spin it around to be positive, to look at what your future is going to be like. It's going to be decluttered. Plus, you're going to save money because you're not going to waste money.
I will link to that, as always, in the show notes. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.